In the current issue of Boston Review, former chief UN weapons inspector Hans Blix writes that it might be easier to persuade Iran to suspend its uranium enrichment program if the United States would do the same. Mr. Blix also urges several other measures to stem the proliferation of nuclear weapons. In his former UN role, Mr. Blix led the search for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq before the U.S. invasion in 2003. Since then, he has been chair of the Swedish government's Weapons of Mass Destruction Commission. He is on the line with us from Stockholm. Mr. Blix, what makes you think that Iran might suspend its uranium enrichment program if the U.S. did the same?
Well, I think Iran will look around the world and see that the UK has prolonged this Trident program, its nuclear weapons, and that the US has proposed also to have a replacement for a standard weapon. And the argument is that if the UK and the US actually see nuclear weapons as a deterrent, is it peculiar if the Iranians reason the same way? And so long as nuclear weapon states, the US and the UK and Russia and the others as well, are pushing ahead and show little signs of actually doing the nuclear disarmament that they promised in the Non-Proliferation Treaty in 1968, I think other states also feel that there is a double standard.
And wouldn't the current talks between Russia and the U.S. over the Bush administration's plans to put anti-missile defense in Europe probably make it even more difficult?
Yes. A year ago or so, Kofi Annan used to talk about a sleepwalking into new arms races. I think today we have come a little further than that. We are awake in walking towards further arms races, which is a bit peculiar because the relations on substance are not really worsening.
Is the U.S. plan to put anti-missile defense in Europe a significant problem in this case? Is this really a nuclear weapons issue?
Well, I think it comes at the end of a long development. Neither the Chinese nor the Russians have been comfortable with the U.S. missile shield. I mean, they have certainly listened to the comments from the U.S. side that that's not directed against them and that they can penetrate the shield and this is intended for Iran or for North Korea. But the threat from Iran is perhaps 15 years away, so the Russians are a bit suspicious.
One other suggestion in your Boston Review article is that official U.S. recognition of Iran's government might positively motivate Iran. And you point out the U.S. has made such an offer to North Korea. What reasons does the U.S. give for the difference in approach, and are they legitimate?
I haven't really heard the U.S. government giving an explanation why they treat Iran so differently from North Korea. In the case of Iran, they say that Iran must suspend its enrichment program. That's a precondition for sitting down and talk about anything. In the case of North Korea, North Koreans are actually making more plutonium all the time, and the U.S. sits down happily and discusses with them in Beijing. Well, perhaps happily is saying a bit too much, but they're sitting down. And two things are offered to the North Koreans, among other things. They're offering a guarantee against attacks from the outside if they make a nuclear settlement, and they're also offering that there could be normalization relations both with the U.S. and with Japan. Now, these are important cards, and neither of them have been offered in the case of Iran.
You're suggesting that security guarantees are particularly important because feeling threatened is a major reason why countries seek weapons of mass destruction.
That's right. I mean, we all want to avoid the spread of nuclear weapons, and we must then ask ourselves, what makes the guy tick? Why do they want nuclear weapons? And practically always, it is a perceived security that they want to satisfy. Pakistan, India, China, and so forth, Israel, the Arab states. The North Koreans, too, they're probably a bit paranoic. I mean, they had the Korean War in 1950, during which the U.S. commanders asked for authorization to use nuclear weapons, and they were given that authorization, but they didn't use it. But surely the North Koreans have never forgotten that. And they are alone. They don't have the Russians as friends any longer, nor do they have the Chinese as friends. And the Iranians will not forget that the U.S. toppled the Mossadegh government in 1953.
You've suggested that in any case the U.S. has to lead in this area, and you suggest a number of changes the U.S. needs to make. We've made reference to some of them. Give us what that list of things is that the U.S. could do to lead in this area.
Well, one other element, of course, was normalization of relations. The U.S. has not had relations with Iran since 1979 when the U.S. embassy was occupied, and all the Europeans have diplomatic relations. So that would be one thing. The security guarantees is another one. However, what I'm really driving at is that we would like to see a turn of the wind in the direction of disarmament. What we are now seeing, after all, is a sort of rearmament going on. And would it not be possible for a U.S. government to take the lead in moving away from the nuclear weapons? The U.S. Senate could take up the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, which they rejected under Mr. Clinton. If that were to be adopted and there were to be a ban on all nuclear weapons tests, that would really make a great impact. And there are a number of other steps that can be taken. One could, for instance, think of removing the nuclear weapons from Western Europe within NATO. And we could have an international agreement about further ending the production of fissionable material, let's say enriched uranium or plutonium, for weapons purposes. There's a whole number of things that could be done if the will was there, especially on the part of the U.S., to take an initiative to a wave of nuclear disarmament.
Hans Blix is the former chief U.N. weapons inspector and is now the chair of the Weapons of Mass Destruction Commission. He spoke with us from Stockholm. Thank you very much, Mr. Blix.
Thank you.
You'll find a link to Hans Blix's essay in Boston Review at our website, npr.org.